Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, week 11 is in the books. If there's one thing that stood out to me about the NFL this weekend, seemed to be a whole lot of confrontation. We had Tennessee mixing it up with Baltimore before the game. We had Sean Payton and Roddy White going at it on the internet, and a whole other host of things happening. So I thought of Drew Hodgdon, a guy who, much like myself, was kind of a fiery youngster at one point, but then grew and matured and grew wiser, maybe less temperamental. But we've got a past, and I wanted to talk to Drew about that as well as a whole lot of other things. Plus, I'm having hernia surgery tomorrow, so I'm a little bit distracted, and Drew always makes me laugh. So I thought, what better time for myself and my beloved listeners to have a good laugh than right now before I have hernia surgery? Some of you who follow me on Instagram might have seen the video where I explained how I passed out when they were explaining the surgery to me. I get a little bit queasy about anything involving my innards. So let's talk and hang out with Drew Hodgdon instead. Oh, and I started out asking him about his screen name on Zoom, Captain Coconuts.
Captain Coconuts?
Yeah. that's the code word.
Do you use that for work?
No. I should have changed that.
I'm here with Captain Coconuts. I'm getting hernia surgery tomorrow, so I'm a little bit
distracted. Shit.
It's one of the things they warned me about was that I should wear compression shorts because my coconuts might swell up like in Johnny Dangerously.
Did they make clear you have normally excessively large balls?
So they're we know that your compression shorts are already stretched to their limits, so maybe we're two. Yeah.
We noticed something during the pre-surgery exam. You're gonna have to wear some better shorts.
Yeah, it's weird. I passed out when they were explaining the surgery to me a couple months ago or a month or so ago. And I don't know, I still to this day, they didn't think there was anything wrong with it. So it was it was fight or flight response that I had.
Right.
He was showing me, did you even know that they're like little muscles? This makes total sense. And I feel like an idiot for not knowing it. There are little muscles that pull your balls up when your balls retract. I always thought it was just like the scrotum shrinking that pushed your balls up. But there's tiny little muscles that yank them back to safety, like a mother pulling her child train track.
Have you never heard from any of your teammates or center buddies what happens when you play center?
Do you get hernias a lot?
You don't get hernias, but you get elevated testicle syndrome.
Shut up.
I'm being completely serious.
What happens?
It started happening my sophomore year of college, and I would get into practice, and then it became right before the snap, every time my balls would shoot up into my stomach, and I would stop, and I was like,
shut up.
What the fuck is going on? And I went over to the team doctor, and I was like, dude, I'm having something weird is happening. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, dude, my balls are all up in there. And now it's they're mostly kind of in there all the time.
All the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's weird.
They're not hanging down normal. And I went to I went to Muntz and was like, dude, is this a thing? And he's like, dude, it is very common.
Common. Does it disrupt your sperm production?
It can.
Yeah. Have you ever bothered to get that check, or do you just assume it's natural birth control and raw dog it?
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. It's both that, but I also am like, I'm just such an alpha male that it offsets whatever like the normal percentages that I would. I just assume. Yeah. I'm so virile that it's like, it's probably good for the best.
You didn't want to punch a hole through a poor lady with a for this. So that's common with centers?
Yeah, that's what they told me. They were like, in which I haven't actually like talked to like my buddy who ended up playing. Oh, you probably. I guess you wouldn't have played against him. Yeah. Mike Pollock, but he played guard for Indianapolis for.
Yeah, I remember them.
Like 7-8 years. He was the center after me at ASU and he had the same problem.
God, I wish I would have known that. Like when I was facing centers, like which ones I could have played on their insecurities about their tiny testicles.
Yeah, he totally would have been like, dude, I want to make a big deal out of this, but like it looks weird from here. It looks weird.
I was talking to somebody about jock straps the other day, and I don't think anybody wears jock straps anymore, do they?
Dude, that is one of the best. Like, there are two persistent myths, I think, for people that never played football that are just like don't seem to go at. One is that we all did ballet to get good at football.
Oh, because that was a Lynn Swann thing. Like, yeah, so that, because like, Lynn Swann did it like twice in some offseason back in the day.
Yeah.
People assumed. And then every now and then there'd be some college offensive line that whose coach would have them do it. So okay,
it's like
so,
one out of three people. They're like, oh, you play football. They're like, did you do ballet? Like always. That's like one of and then the other one is like, dude, is wearing a jock strap weird? And I'm like, I have never fucking wore one. I don't know. I think
I did, and I was an old man because of it. Like people thought I was, I could tell that was when it was like Tom Brady's probably the only person that still might wear one.
You wore one?
I did the whole time I played. And you know what was dumb? I wore a jock strap because at Cornell, they just handed them out. And I was like, okay, I guess we wear jock straps. We had like polyester shorts, like not the good polyester, like polyester that would chafe your inner thighs. Like, great, I'm squatting, I'm getting huge and bloody. I started menstruating my freshman year in college.
Yeah, you're bleeding from your taint.
I squatted 600 and menstruated on the same day.
Like, Seth, your grundle is bleeding. I don't know if you know that. I've never seen that before. It's completely normal.
I wore it, and guys started teasing me about it, and I didn't think anything of it.
Did you put a cup in it?
No. That's another misconception is that football players wear cups. And I don't think
anybody
does.
Is it literally so it's like holding just your junk?
Just to keep your balls safe. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think back in the day, think about the guys in the 70s when they would wear those short shorts. Like,
I think about it all the time.
Honestly, think about what you've seen in the locker room and then think about how well those short shorts might have contained some of those physical anomalies.
That's how I always looked at it. I was always like, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm working with that kind of gear. That is just not, we don't have these problems.
There's a constant ego check being in an NFL locker room.
Exactly. I was like, dude, we don't have these problems.
Like, I don't know. My girlfriend would think that's gross, I'm sure. Totally. I'm glad I don't have that.
So much extra work. Like, yeah, fine. Like every girl I've dated where they're like, oh, wow. Like, no, you're doing it. And I'm like, let's not. But don't bullshit me. It's fine.
Did you happen to see, you saw Anthony Weaver like angrily defending his guys? And I guess what I didn't tell you about, let's play this right now.
Yeah, we got to not give up 60-yard runs at the end of the game, Aaron. This narrative that's being painted like my guys are undisciplined and running around blocks, quite frankly, and if you put it bluntly, is bullshit. My guys play hard, they battle, they're doing the absolute best they can, and they leave their everything they have on that football field to go out there and stone the run. We lost the game 10-0. Yeah, you could say it's been 17-0. All right, but we expect to go out there and stop the run every time we do it. But to sit here and paint this narrative, there was a question asked to Romeo the other day about the accountability of the defense. Are they accountable? Hell yeah, they're accountable. Anybody that's worked for me, anything I've done in my entire life has been accountable. And if that's ever questioned, then I'll resign. Okay? But these guys battle. They fight. They're doing everything they can to go out there and stop the run. And we're going to try to do it again this weekend.
So this is the interesting thing about this, Drew. And in Houston, we talked about this, but I wanted to get your perspective on it. Weaver and Romeo Crennel at various times have talked about gap discipline. and like all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he starts like angrily defending his guys. And I thought was, okay, this is some kind of this is his strategy for the week because these guys are embattled. And they did, like, they were playing. I don't want to say soft, because I don't think there are a bunch of soft guys on that defense, but they were not necessarily playing with great gap discipline. And I think that Weaver was at that point where he said, all right, it's just all or nothing at this point. Our backs are against the wall, and we're just going to go into this bunker mentality. And this is a really interesting thing. Back in the day, a coach might try to send a message through the traditional media. I think Weaver understands, and I haven't texted or called Weaver about this, because 3 days before he put that video out, I did a video on television about how the Texans lacked cap discipline. So I'm watching that video and I'm like,
like, am I being spotlighted?
Yeah. But like I said, Romeo and Weaver themselves have talked about this before. And I think that he was just kind of sending a message to his guys, because that went somewhat viral on social media, at least amongst guys. You know that guys' friends sent that to him and everything. And after the game, Jordan Reed actually said that, you know, yeah, Weaver's a guy that's got our back and everything. And what do you think of that strategy?
I mean, I think it makes sense. I also think, like, the insight that guys, like, not as much you, because you actually had the benefit of being on teams that weren't horrendous, but the majority of my career, I was only on bad teams. So mm-hmm. I really bring that kind of insight and experience to a conversation like this.
Yeah, so that's like, no, yeah. Actually, there is something to be said for that. Like, when Kubiak came in the first year that Kubiak was coaching, I was like, Coach, you got to settle down. You've been on good teams too long. You could see his brain was frying because he hadn't dealt with this. He'd been with San Francisco and then Denver. They never have back-to-back losing seasons or anything. But so I know where you're coming from. I know you're joking a little bit, but there is something about that.
No, there is. There's something to be said for it, which is why I think you guys, you know, I don't want to – I'm not going to act like every free agent that came on the team that was Ed Reed that came in and then struggled immediately. But it's like, there's something to be said when you've never been on a bad team, or even Deshaun Watson, who's probably only ever really won at a really high level. And then he's having to experience just a brutal long season, what is just back-to-back losses. And I know they won this past weekend, but it's like, you're really throwing anything at the wall at this point.
Yeah.
Anything you can to elicit a response. You probably don't really give too much, you know, of an S about, like, what the media is saying when you're trying to make sure your guys are either motivated. It's like, no kidding, they don't have good discipline. Yeah, we're 3-7. Of course they don't have good gap discipline. Like, bad teams do bad things.
That was what was so cool about it, was, like, none of it made any sense, except that, you know what, this is – because I did the same thing once when we went 2-14. I walked into a defensive backs meeting room and – you know, one of the guys in there was taking a lot of heat because he basically dove away from a tackle instead of making a tackle on the goal line. And I basically acted like, all those punks out there don't know what the hell anybody's talking about. We're all together. We're all in this together, you know, and it didn't work. We still sucked afterwards. But but in this instance, you're right. You get to that. You get to week 10 or 11 and you only had a couple of wins. You start running out of pep talks. Like, like you said, you're throwing anything you can up against the wall. I liked it. And they did. They came out and they played their asses off. That's why I thought of Weaver and you, because you and I were buddies, obviously, when we were playing. You were an offensive lineman, I was a defensive lineman. But the year that Weaver came in, Weaver came from Baltimore, where in Baltimore, that was still an old school team where there were fights in practice, like, quite a bit. And the defensive line's whole rule was, hey, if one defensive lineman gets in a fight, we're all going in. And they had Kelly Gregg, who is a nose tackle who'd been a national champion wrestler in college and was into MMA in the offseason.
I practiced against him when I went to Baltimore.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, he's no joke. No. He's the real deal.
Yeah.
So when Weaver got here, his whole thing was, hey, if anybody gets in a fight, we all jump in. And I remember you and Travis Johnson got into a fight in practice one day. And I ran in, and I still feel bad about this.
I remember this.
I don't remember. I grabbed you or something, and you turned and looked at me like I was I was Brutus.
Yeah, 100%. I looked at you like I looked at you like I was Ned Stark, and I was just betrayed. I was absolutely stunned because I felt like there was one guy on the defensive line that I could trust. Who's just gonna, you know, be led by their emotions around by the nose? That was just I cannot believe you betrayed me in this way. Yeah, I was stunning. I was stunned.
It's funny though. That's different from like team culture to team culture. Because when I was in Jacksonville, we fought a lot.
Yeah.
And like I would say, I probably averaged like 1.5 fights per year in practice when I was in Jacksonville. My rookie year, I got in a few. Then I might not have gone a year, and then I got in a couple fights with. A lot of times, it was rookies. You'd fight rookies because they were not going too hard, but going too stupid. You know, like off balance and holding you after you beat them. You know, just stupid stuff that gets people hurt.
Yeah.
And but then we got to Houston, and Capers was really against it. So we'd lost it in the culture. And then Weaver brought it back. So when I saw that fieriness, a lot of people in Houston don't really think of Anthony Weaver as being as fiery a guy as he is, but he can really turn it on and off.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always actually shocked when I got to Houston and it wasn't more that way. I expected it to be more because that was sort of my personal brand, at least when I was, and that was our identity when I was in college. And then I got there. And I would start fights and people would do that thing where they would look at me like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I was just like, I see.
I wonder if that was like one of the problems from the very start of the franchise. Maybe that's why there's too many goody two shoes there. And that's like a constant.
I feel like it was just because there's, you know, as professional as it is in the NFL, it's kind of like, I feel like you still have to go through that stretch where you're still a little grimy and gritty and rough around the edges, and then you've earned your stripes, and then you can be, you know, it becomes part of the culture there. And you know, when push comes to shove, you can dig in there and you can behave that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the Texans ever went through that trial by fire where they got it and then moved on to being more professional and regimented.
It was all, and, you know, from the very beginning, the thing that I always hated was that the quarterbacks were under strict instructions not to tease or haze whatsoever David Carr. You know, like even friendly stuff that quarterbacks do, some of the veterans like Tony Banks and those guys in that room. And I don't know, man, there was always this culture of some of those young guys. We started six guys on offense the rookie years in that first season. Yeah. And there was almost just a little bit of, it's what they say about UT, like a sense of entitlement also, almost kick like gloves. Some of the recruits feel like they're hotter crap than they already are. And
I feel like they always treated his personality like it was made of glass. You know, his ego could not. And if there's one thing I've learned, you know, just even from being there and then watching afterwards, even just as like a general spectator, is the ones that do well are the ones who just have ice water running in their veins.
Yeah.
Like it's not their arm strength. It's just the fact that they are not going to be, you know, they're not going to panic at all and under any situation. And that was not really his experience.
Yeah. They're psychotically self-confident, like in whatever insecurities they have, they cover it up by being psychotically self-confident. It's that like weird mixture of whatever insecurity really makes them like drives them and makes them super competitive. They balance it out with like an incredible confidence. And they're really good quarterbacks are like that.
Yeah. Being on a good team is being part of a cult.
Yeah. 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 It is. Yeah. That's why I don't mind. Like sometimes these cultish college guys like Dabo Swinney. Yeah. Go for it. Be a cult. Culturally effective at doing what they convince people to castrate themselves and that they're gonna hop on a comet after they commit suicide. That's an incredible thing to convince somebody of. You think if you can convince people of that, convincing them to win a football game is no big deal at all.
Yeah, totally. Go for it. Like, go all the way. Maybe they will.
Did you, when you were at Arizona State, because you were there with Terrell Suggs, it seems like Terrell Suggs would be a big fighter.
He really wasn't. He was actually more of like a diva prima donna, and he would be shocked if anyone tried to fight him. So naturally, I would try to fight him constantly. So
yeah, really? Like,
that's how that worked. I always felt like it was my obligation. There weren't too many opportunities because I was at center.
Yeah.
You know? But if I ever caught him on like a TE or something, it was like lights out.
Did he, didn't you guys room together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When, like your freshman year or later on?
Freshman year. Yeah, he was not a real human being. I mean, he was one of those kinds of personalities where I remember like he knocked on my door our first year, and there was a lot of buzz about him because he really came in as like a running back. He was one of those guys where he was this like 6'3", 230-pound, like all-American running back in Arizona. And they thought, okay, this guy at defensive end is going to absolutely light people up. And he came in and he just had a huge chip on his shoulder. And he knocked on my door after like 2 days. It was like 10 p.m. He was like, hey, man, are you up? And I was like, no, I mean, I was trying to sleep, but yeah, what's going on? He's like, and I was just thinking about this, like, people say Rocky is Italian, but he's white. And I was like, this is just going to be the worst roommate situation ever. I can tell this is how this is going
to
go.
Did you like, sit down and explain to him the vagaries?
There's a difference between like ethnicity, nationality. And what, and I was like, I don't even, you know, and I know a week from now when you ask me about how gorillas have disposable thumbs that I should not be surprised.
Oh, disposable thumbs. Yeah.
Well, it was crazy because he was just like a prodigy. He understood a playbook better than anyone else on the team.
Really?
He looked at it like I think prodigies look at sheets of music. Yeah. He just understood it immediately. I mean, he really did. It wasn't just that he had phenomenal get off and pass rush moves or instincts. I mean, he understood the defense. So it was incredible right out of the gate. I mean, he was just lighting people up.
What was the other thing I thought about you for? Oh, Tennessee and Baltimore going at it before the game, since today's theme is kind of fighting and confrontations. Yeah, and then after the game, John Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel kind of had a half handshake. They both said afterwards that it was no big deal. I put myself in John Harbaugh's shoes, and I felt genuine empathy for the frustration that it feels like after you have a big confrontation like that, and all you want to do is beat somebody into the dirt, and then you lose, and then you have to try to be sportsmanlike afterwards. So I thought of you with that, though, because I was wondering if you had ever gotten in that situation where you get in a fight in a game or in practice or something, and you get so angry that you just can't function, and it gets worse and worse because you're so angry.
Oh, yeah. I used to, because I felt like I went through this stretch in college where I felt like I was so dialed in because of this like rage that I was like tapping into, that I felt like I had to be irate all the time to really be like at my peak potential. And then you realize after a while when you're playing legitimate athletes that that's just not sustainable, you know, after a while, because they're too good.
That's something that I actually thought of with Bill O'Brien, because I used to be a much angrier person than I am now. And there is a part of you that feels like it's some special skill or some asset that you have.
Yeah.
And it's really damaging, because what ends up happening is it's almost like a drug or any other kind of crutch where it'll get you through situations. And you think because you get through the situation that it must have been good for you. Yeah. When in fact it like leaves a trail of devastation, the same way like cocaine or alcohol or anything else you would do to try to get through a situation. And O'Brien, I think, is like that. I agree. Yeah. He thinks he wins arguments. He probably thinks that, you know, he gets people to see things his way when really he just steamrolls them.
It's good. I mean, you know, when you're playing, if you have that kind of compartmentalization and you can turn it on at the right time, I mean, it gives you that like shot of adrenaline. But there are too many, especially when you're like at a more cerebral position, like offensive line, or if you're like a defensive specialist that actually reads the plays and knows what's going on, you can't just be out of control like that. I remember when we were playing, when you and I were playing together, and we were playing the Dolphins, and it was, I don't know if you remember when whoever was playing, I think it was Todd Wade, got injured, and our left tackle came in, and it was like Brad Bedell or someone from Green Bay, and Jason Taylor was still playing at like a relatively high level. Like he was still doing it. And you just knew the moment that happened that it was about to go from bad to way worse.
Yeah.
And the very next play was a sack fumble, maybe also a touchdown. They like picked it up and ran it back to like the 10-yard line or whatever. And I remember I decided to take that opportunity to try to just obliterate Zach Thomas. Like, not in a clean way really at all. Like the play was basically over and I was like, I am just going to light this guy up, like whatever. And I got him like pretty clean, and he gets up and he turns around and he just very calmly walked up to me and he was like, how long you been playing? And I was like, it's my rookie year. And he goes, yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
And I was like, that hurts, Mom. you're not mad. You're disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh man, that's all right.
Man, I'm glad you told me that story because, the center for the Andre Garrard, is that how you pronounce it? The center for the Cowboys?
Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah. Andre Garrard. I hope I'm not mispronouncing it.
I always say Gerard, but I don't know if that's right.
Yeah. His rookie year, his first game was the Texans' first game ever versus the Cowboys. Man, I had forgotten about this.
He's good.
Glad you brought that up. Okay. So he's playing center and he's a big guy. Like I thought he should have been a guard or a tackle or I guess a guard because he was just too big to be a center. And yeah. I was kind of working him over. I was having a really good game and you know, he's a center, a rookie, first game ever. So he was out of his league in that moment. And I kept telling him, I was just messing with his brain a little bit. I was like, dude, you got a chance, but you're too big. They got to move you to guard. This is not the position for you. Just you're good, buddy. You'll be all right. But man, this is just, they're fucking you right now by having you play center. And, you know, I didn't really think anything of it. He goes on and develops into a really good player, you know, and 5 years later, last game I ever played at the start of the snap, The start of the game, like after our first snap, he says something like, Hey Seth, am I still too big? Am I still too big? And he wasn't saying it like, you know, like I'm gonna kick your ass, old man, or anything. But he was just kinda he was reminding me. And I was like, yeah, I remember. I was like, man, you did all right, you proved me wrong. And then like three plays later, he's trying to reach me on a stretch zone and I plant my foot in the turf, tear my ACL, and I'm done. So I got to call him up about that. I should have him on.
I forgot that was that game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually felt bad about, as I was reflecting on it, as I was getting carted into the locker room, I actually felt bad for having said that when he was a rookie. Like I should have said something to him after the game about saying like, hey, I'm just messing with you, man. You know, like you're going to be all right. And I think I did say something kind of like that in the game, but I probably should have really like sought him out on the field afterwards. And
probably.
Yeah. 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 But he did all right. Maybe it was what spurred him on. Maybe I should take credit for all of his Pro Bowls.
Yeah. I was going to say, actually the best way to spin that is that he owes all of his success to you.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? You know who did that? Since we were talking about Justin Reed earlier.
Are you about to just show me a list of people that owe all their accolades to you?
These are people I've insulted along the way that use that.
You brought this up. All these people owe their success to me.
That's going
to
do. I'm going to be doing a parenting seminar where it's all about belittling your children to instill a sense of desperation in them.
I think that's good. I mean, it definitely wreaks havoc after they're 30, but before then, at least they make it big.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago versus the Browns, Justin Reed had a rough snap where he just had poor leverage on a tackle that Nick Chubb ended up scoring on. So Justin Reed, a safety. And Rivers McCown is a blogger who writes about the Texans. He tweeted out a video of it and said, Justin Reed, box player, huh? Sorry about your fantasy teams. Sorry about your fantasy teams because Nick Chubb stepped out of bounds right before the touchdown just to seal the game right then. Justin Reed quote tweeted him and said, STFU, shut the fuck up, asinine punk. Called Rivers McCown an asinine punk. So Rivers, who after that changed his screen name to asinine punk, he responded to Justin Reed and said, use it and prove me wrong, hope you do. And Rivers is a Texans fan, you know, he's a fan blogger, he's a really, really good writer. But anyways, Justin Reed, during this last week, Anthony Weaver has his kind of blow up in the press conference. The players are all kind of mum for the most part. Justin Reed goes out and has a really good game, has his first sack in his NFL career, made some really physical plays. And then immediately after the game tweets out, quote tweets Rivers McCown and says, I appreciate you. I took the criticism to heart and had something to prove today. Salute. Which is a pretty cool, like not passive aggressive or ironic or anything at all there. Like I'm impressed that he was mature enough about it. There's part of me that kind of wishes that he weren't that affected by a fan blogger.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of like the arc there was interesting. The resolution came out okay, but you're sort of like, we shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Yeah. Like you shouldn't have been,
You shouldn't have been up in your mentions.
No, that's a whole different dynamic too of the game that like hadn't really emerged at all when I was playing, like where people even engage. Like that's
right,
not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. Because 2005, 2006, there was no, I think Facebook was just getting started right about then. And every now and then, like you might, I think MySpace, I think some people, nobody in the league had a MySpace unless they were guys that were into party promotions and stuff. You had a few guys that were like either, you know, want to be DJs or whatever. They might have a MySpace page, but it was nothing like that to the point now where Roddy White talked smack about the Falcons versus the Saints before the game or tweeted something about it. Then Sean Payton retweeted it after the game.
Like, well, the difference, the incentive structure now is so different. Like you're incentivized in a lot of ways to engage like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like
monetarily,
or even just to promote whatever you might perceive to be like your own brand or something. It's like, there's a weird, it's a different animal. I mean, whereas like in the past, it kind of felt like you were only, unless you were one of the most premier players who could get away with that.
You were representing the team and the team alone, right? Yeah, totally. That's where I, like, as a player, I kept my mouth shut. Because a few times I said things on the media that were even just taken out of context to the point where I started being really boring and bland in the media because I didn't like it when, see, like, whenever I said anything colorful, somebody would take it out of context somewhere.
Right.
And say it was bulletin board material. So I just stopped where you're right. It's a little bit more like the WWE now, there's like a promotional aspect to it. And I think even just a lot of the coaches, Peyton's older than you and I, obviously, but a lot of the coaches are, I think they're more cool with it because they understand that they have to, because their players are in that generation and they've just had to adapt.
Yeah. Especially like, I think you see it where it crops up at the college level and then they just can't, once that's taken root, you're not getting rid of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they've grown up with it their whole lives. Like it's not going away. Yeah.
All right, man. I'm gonna go get my balls chopped apart apparently tomorrow. That's not what's happening. Literally, anybody that's getting hernia surgery is not that big a deal. What do we call you? You have elevated testicles?
Yeah, I got elevated balls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can they relax that with like Botox or something?
What? Did you just like pick a random quick thing or something?
No,
Botox?
No, because that's what they'll do. That's how Botox works. It like paralyzes. I think it paralyzes the muscles in your face, and that's what relaxes the wrinkles. I think that's why women with a lot of Botox can't make facial expressions and everything.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, so you mean if they literally went like subcutaneous and give you injections
and just inject your little muscles there?
I guess. I haven't. There's an element. It's like the like if I'm really married to like the aesthetics of it, I'm like, man, I really want like some deep, low hanging balls. I feel like later in life,
when you're like, 70, they're gonna be so normal looking. I know. The balls of a 45 year old. Women,
look at these
women
balls.
The old folks
smooth as eggs.
Talk about you. His balls were above his glands penis.
Look
still.
Guys, still killing it, dude. How long are you gonna be out of commission?
I'm going back to work on Wednesday. I'm gonna broadcast from home.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, I asked Twitter, and a few of my followers were teachers. Said that they went back the next day and they just sat the whole time. They taught while sitting. And I felt like that's the same as me talking on the radio for 4 hours.
Yeah,
so that I don't get harassed by any adolescents. So,
but isn't it like when you genuflect, it can, like you feel something, right? I mean, that's like so if you're talking and you get animated,
yeah,
I would think that you can, I don't know.
When I genuflect, when I inflect, like when I.
Yeah.
Genuflect isn't genuflect like bowing down in abeyance to somebody?
Oh, I thought it was just like an overly animated.
That's like, a gesticulation.
You're right.
Yeah.
It is.
Genuflect. Yeah. I was trying to like.
What did I say?
I don't
what
you said I genuflect. I don't. I don't genuflect to nobody know how. That's how I operate.
Seth, I think we've learned that I don't talk to people that know bigger words than me very often. So.
You just roll through it.
I'd appreciate it if you would just let that go.
All right, Mr. Coconuts. Next week, we'll actually talk like super, super serious football. Like we'll get down to business. We'll have nothing but boring and bland stuff to say for a good 78 minutes.
I would love that. Yeah, I would like to really get into the weeds on that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.